Side Hustle Show 136, how a part-time blog turned into an eight-figure business.
Welcome to the Side Hustle Show, where aspiring part-time entrepreneurs learn how to turn their side hustle dreams into reality. Because your 9-to-5 may make you a living, but your 5-to-9 makes you alive. And now, your host, Nick Loper.
What's happening? Nick Loper here. Welcome to the Side Hustle Show. Welcome to October. Coming to you live from beautiful Livermore, California. Today's show is how a part-time blog turned into an eight-figure business. Stick around to hear how my guest started one of the world's most popular blogs, his best practices for writing sales copy that converts in any niche, and how you can find problems to solve using the world's best free market research tool. Yes, I am chatting with Brian Clark from Rainmaker Digital, formerly Copy Blogger Media and still found at copyblogger.com. Now, I've got to confess, I'm obviously aware of Brian and Copy Blogger, but was not super familiar with his work. So I reached out to the Side Hustle Nation Facebook group to ask their help. Hey, what should I ask him? What should we talk about? So thank you so much to everyone who responded to that thread. Patrick, Dave, Kendra, Jim, Brian, Becky, and Tony. You may hear your questions sprinkled in throughout this conversation. If you're not already a part of the free Side Hustle Nation Facebook community, you can join at sidehustlenation.com/FB. That will redirect you over there. Now, all the notes and links from this conversation are at sidehustlenation.com/136. And I've compiled a free highlight reel PDF with Brian's top tips that you can download at that URL. Or if you're a US-based listener, you can get it by texting copyblogger, all one word, to 33444. Message and data rates will apply. I always wanted to say that. Excited to test out this newfangled texting thing that all the kids are talking about these days. So if you do try that out, shoot me a note. Let me know if it works, how it works, or if it's horrible. In the meantime, let's get into this call with Brian Clark.
It started, I'm really concentrating on blogging, but it really encompassed what we now call content marketing. And I had been doing this thing we call content marketing since 98, 99, successfully, really. So I knew what I was talking about because I'd built three businesses using content and online marketing, email, all that good stuff. But at the time and when I came up with the brand, it was really about a different approach to blogging. Number one was applying copywriting principles that are typically for ad copy to content to make it more engaging, more shareable, all of those kind of good things that get us found and get us traffic. And the other thing, which was completely heresy at the time, was no, you shouldn't sell advertising, you should sell stuff. And of course, that's no big deal. But in 2006, in the blogging world, that ruffled some feathers. But it turned out that a lot of the big bloggers who didn't like that misjudged their audiences. So when they complained about me, their audience came over and joined mine, which I was like, thank you.
Okay.
So it really kind of came out of leaving. I was running essentially two real estate brokerages and a small law firm at one time between 2001 and 2005. And I was pretty burnt out and I wasn't really feeling passionate about what I was doing. So I finally just said, look, I really like doing content. I like doing marketing. What I'm going to do is teach people what I know and see what happens. I have a feeling that if I build an audience, I can listen to them and figure out what it is they want to buy. So I came into it without a product, a service, or a business model for the first time in my entrepreneurial career.
Okay.
But of course, it turned out to be the most lucrative thing I've done so far.
Now, in those early days, as you're running the law firm and these other businesses, like what did you find to be the most effective way to get attention and grow that audience?
So the two real estate brokerages were, it's a very traditional offline business, but they existed only in the form of websites. They were virtual brokerages. And this is before Zillow and a lot of this stuff became more common. So it wasn't an innovative business, but it was innovative in the way that it worked and the way that I attracted customers. So I was very specialized. I only worked with buyers. I provided tons of content on the site that explained why it's better to go with someone like me than someone who represents the seller or both sides of the transaction. I created even back then, little courses, depending on what type of buyer you were. If you were a first-time buyer, you would opt in to an email list, basically, that would deliver relevant information that matched up to what I knew to be the buying cycle for them. And then there was another one for people who were relocating to the area, and I knew that they had a longer decision cycle. It was usually they'd start searching online a year before they actually decided to do it and hired someone. So it was just knowing my audience and speaking to them in a way that explained why I was a better choice. And by doing that, even though I was technically cutting myself off of half the market, I had all the clients I could handle.
Yeah, saying, hey, I'm the go-to person for this specific need and,
yes,
and creating content around that.
Which is always a great rule of thumb for everything. We always want to appeal to everyone, and that is the worst thing you can do.
Yeah, if you're not pissing somebody off, you're doing something wrong. Now, this is pre-YouTube, pre-Twitter. You know, Facebook is only open to college students at the time. Like, do the tactics used to grow these businesses and grow Copyblogger apply today? Like, if somebody wanted to start a similarly ambitious blog project in 2015 or beyond?
Oh, yeah, absolutely. And so even at the beginning of Copyblogger, social media was effectively blogs and bookmarking sites and the old version of Dig, which was, you know, yeah, a social media news site. So now that social media has gone mainstream and people share content that's interesting, I always maintain that it's easier now than it was back then. Now, when I started the real estate businesses, SEO was a lot easier. Mm-hmm. So I started with this new thing called pay-per-click to get rolling. And I, of course, you know, the people I was competing against didn't understand what a landing page was. They weren't capturing email addresses. They weren't targeting traffic. All this basic stuff we take for granted now. In 2001, very few people understood that.
So Wild, Wild West.
Yeah. And then, of course, SEO, I was completely white hat, but it was still just very much easier to do if you were creating good content. So the stuff that worked back then fundamentally still works right now. SEO may be a little bit harder. It really just comes down. There's really not too much you can do if people don't like your content first, because that's what Google's looking for. Mm-hmm. So the idea is to not think about Google at first and think about people and focus on building your email list, because even if Google never works out, you've got a business asset right there. That's, you know, the channel online that still leads to sales. It's clearly email, 40 times higher than social media. So you had some people who were kind of screwing up as social media became mainstream, trying to sell on Facebook. Well, people aren't there to be sold to, but they will, consume content. They will respond to an opt-in offer if it's good enough. And that's really still what works.
Yeah, I think you hit on a couple of things. Most importantly is like creating something that's actually worth visiting, worth linking to, worth, you know, being that compelling piece of information to help people out or entertain someone. Because there's so many blogs and even this podcast. So like, who wants to listen to an entrepreneurial interview show? And it's something that I've had to kind of, you know, revise the focus and vision on over the past couple of years. And thankfully, the feedback has been good enough to keep it going, and the results have been good enough to keep it going.
Well, yeah, this show is a great example of valuable information. It doesn't always have to just come from you. You can share the expertise of others. And I've always done that. Even when I started Copyblogger, like I said, I knew what I was doing, but I was always giving credit to those who had taught me. Mm-hmm. And it's interesting because you don't have to pretend like it's all you. I think people can see through, to a certain degree, people who claim to have invented a certain technique or strategy or something. And then they're like, no, you didn't. This guy over here did. And they're like, whoops. So give credit, but you still build authority by sharing knowledge. Even if you just learned it the day before yesterday, you're 2 days ahead of your audience. Mm-hmm. And it's an amazing thing.
Well, thank you for that. Yeah, it very rarely comes from me. I owe it all to the guests. I want to talk about kind of this transition from, you know, building this blog, building this audience, and to turning that into a business. Do you remember what the first thing you sold on Copyblogger was? First monetization attempt?
Yeah, well, it's interesting because technically our first product didn't come out until the fall of 2007. So that's what, a year and 9 months, which sounds like an awfully long time. But you have to remember, again, the blogging world was very different back then. So I took my time to build trust to, to where by the time we sold our first product, it went from zero to $100,000 in a week and $1 million the next year. People were begging us. And it was really me, and I was working with partnerships and whatnot, but they were begging me to sell them something. Now, that's a position you want to be in, as opposed to, why are you spamming me with offers, you know, every minute? But once you have a going business and you have to balance things out between content and offers and all that, it's content marketing. We are in business here. But before that time, two things happened. I did a couple of affiliate promotions, really for market research more than money, to see if the audience would buy and what kind of things. And that helped me decide what to build first. And the other thing is, talk about a side hustle. I launched, this is again, you remember, it was the early days of YouTube. No one knew that Google was going to buy them, but we knew someone was going to buy them. They were too hot at the time. So me and another guy started a video tutorial site that was kind of, it was related to what we talked about on Copyblogger, but obviously it was in a video format that appeals to a different type of person. So 6 months later, Google has bought YouTube. Video mania is beginning. So someone bought that site from us for low six figures.
Wow.
And that's what I used to keep going until we got the first product out. So that's a good example of how you can see an opportunity and chase it, maybe not as your long-term goal, but to fund something else.
Yeah, take advantage of these little blips in the market, or these little gold rushes that are going on as they come. What was the product that you came out with after 1 year and 7 months?
Again, the premise of Copyblogger is that you're not going to make any money off of advertising unless you just have massive traffic. And even now, 10 years later, we know online advertising is in trouble. I mean, it just doesn't work the same way that offline advertising did, at least in the banner ad type context. So what my audience needed was something to sell that they could create. So we decided to offer training in online education. Now, again, it's weird to think about now because online education is a $15 billion a year industry. It is huge. It is gigantic. And that's what I told people in 2007. But I really had to persuade them. They were like, no, everything's going to be free. And it's all on, and I just made this very methodical argument. And the really interesting thing about the way we sold that product is we sold something that didn't exist. So it sounds like a Kickstarter, but this was pre-Kickstarter. So if you have an audience, you can go to them and say, okay, this is what we're going to do for you. See if people sign up. And they did. And then we proceeded to, we had five or six lessons ready to go on day one. But for the most part, we built that entire training program over the next year, week by week, along with the audience, because we're getting feedback from them. It's the difference between writing an entire book and finding out no one likes it or writing the book along with your audience, which many people have done. Blogging books is very much a thing. People now are podcasting books. Interesting, right?
That's right. Hey, it's an audiobook now, told in serial. How many people are we talking to at this point?
So by the time we launched the course, I don't know, maybe 20,000.
Yeah, I mean that's a sizable list for sure, or sizable audience for sure. But really cool to be able to kind of get their feedback and say, hey, this is what we specifically need help with, and it's all very meta because you're talking to other bloggers, other content creators about how to create content, and it's all kind of one big circle. But
this is so meta, and it's really been the hardest thing over the years because, people think, the whole meta thing, that's easier. No, it's not easier. Other normal niches are easier in that you're not being recursive all the time in what you're talking about. So that's been a challenge over the years. But I have to admit that at the beginning, having an audience of bloggers was good for us because they had blogs and they linked to us, and that was very nice.
Yeah, it makes it more challenging because you got to be the authority. Like if you're going to have the Instagram account on how to grow your Instagram account, it's like,
yeah, when their trust level is so low. So, you know, that's, again, why I worked a little harder and waited to make sure that everyone knew that I was just offering value. I didn't have some evil plan. At first, it just took a while to figure out what they really needed. But once we got on a roll, we pretty much created a new line of business every year. So, and it's all, we never took venture capital, no outside investment. I think I spent about $1,000 before I got my money back from Copyblogger, and that was early in year one. Now, my time, that took a while to compensate, but you know, that's what the hustle is all about, right?
Yeah, absolutely. I would probably say my hourly rate from blogging is probably still below minimum wage. It used to be very, very far below, and it's slowly creeping up, but it's probably not there yet. over the course of these years. So, what about this kind of? I posed this question in the Side Hustle Nation Facebook group. Hey, I'm talking with Brian Clark next week. You know, what should we talk about? And one question came up was, hey, what's the best practices for writing sales copy? And I know this could be an entire podcast all on its own, but if you have any kind of high hard ones for people, a lot of this audience is working on building kind of authority style businesses or working on selling, books or products of their own.
Right.
So anything that comes to mind for something like that?
Yeah, absolutely. And it's funny because the secret to writing great copy is the same thing as creating a great podcast or a great magazine or, you know, whatever the case may be. And that's being able to speak to the audience as if it's one person and you know exactly who they are and what drives them and what their problems and desires are and how to satisfy them. And it's as simple as that, which is not that easy, but simple. And so it all comes down to, you know, people will start a blog or they'll start a podcast and they have kind of a half-baked idea and they don't really know who they're talking to, but at least they get started, right? And that's key. But over time, you start to get a better feel. And it seems like this has even occurred with this show in that you got more of a sense of who's listening, what they need, what their problems are, and you're able to adjust your content accordingly. It's the same thing with sales copy. I mean, if you're going to get someone to open up their wallet or even just to opt into an email list or whatever the action is that you want, that's what copy is designed to do, make someone take action. Mm-hmm. And it's basically what's in it for them. And that, again, is very simple, and yet it takes a lot of research and it takes a lot of thought and a lot of empathy. It helps that I am a member of the audience that we sell to. Maybe my entrepreneurial path is a little bit further down the road. It should be after 17 years, right? One would hope. But I've been there. I've been the solo. I've been the guy who hated his job and quit, you know. Mm-hmm. And I've been an entrepreneur with bad management skills who learned how to delegate later and all of that. So that journey I've gone on was the basis of my new podcast, Unemployable, talking to people who are out there, whether they've been on their own for 6 months or 6 years, they're getting it done. So I feel like I can help them with that.
Yeah, I think the unemployable thing will resonate with a lot of people. One of your early shows was the unemployable skill set, which I kind of like that one. You want to talk about what it means to be unemployable in today's economy? I think a lot of people are like, shoot, there's safety in employment. And that's what kind of where I want to be. That's like a familiar place, but it's becoming less so.
Yeah, there's no security in employment. I mean, I don't even think anyone really believes that anymore. I mean, they want it to be the exception. They want to find I hope that my company is an exception. You know, mm-hmm. We talk all the time. I've got a bunch of, they call themselves unemployable misfits, but I've given them an environment where I let them do their thing. It's a very, you know, as long as you're getting your work done and we're all on the same page about where we're trying to get to. I always get this question, how do you manage 62 people who are all over the world? And I say, I don't. If I have to manage you, you don't get to work here. But I do collaborate with them. So if you can turn a side hustle into your thing and then build from there, you have learned how to be an independent economic actor, right? You know how to make money in the world without a paycheck. These are the people I think have security, because if you can spot opportunities and act on them and support yourself and your family, I don't care if it's at the freelance level or further up as you move along. That to me is special, and that's the kind of people I want to talk to.
I think it was in one of Chris Guillebeau's book, your competence is your security. So you don't have to rely on anybody else if you know how to go and get this stuff done. So from a freelancer standpoint, that's where a lot of people will start out and saying, hey, I have, you know, this library of skills that I can do and that I go around and I can, you know, find people in need of those skills kind of on demand. Any other overarching skills that come out or that you see as a trend either on your team or other unemployable people?
Yeah. So this is the irony, and this is what fascinates me as we hear constant concern about the way technology is empowering companies to become smaller. You know, enterprises got big because transaction costs went down as they scaled. Now the reverse is happening. So you have a company like Uber who effectively, if you look at the taxi industry, they've eliminated all those middle managers and dispatchers, which I think adds up to over 100,000 jobs in the taxi industry. Wow. Uber does it without them with an app. So that's kind of a trip, right? Mm-hmm. Then you hear about, okay, we've got automation and robotics. And so long and short, the people who are safe to be employed, if you will, if that's such a thing, will have a certain skill set. And this is what I call the unemployable skill set. It's basically they're creative. They can interact in complex social environments. So, you know, they're basically able to adapt and improvise at will. These are the type of people that will have the opportunity to be hired in the future. But that's also the skill set of the people who are entrepreneurs and freelancers. So let me ask you, which would you choose, the job or would you choose to go on your own? And I think that's the dilemma for a lot of larger companies as we go forward. The best talent is probably not going to sign up for the long haul with you. And we'll see how this plays out in the future, but it's pretty fascinating.
Yeah, absolutely. The most talented people are going to be doing their own things. Once you know how to do it, like, it's so empowering, it's so like freeing. Being like, hopefully I don't have to dust
off. There's a lot of talented people who are, you know, still stuck in jobs because they haven't taken the plunge. Once you learn how to tread water and then start swimming, then it gets really good. And I'm not going to sit here 17 years later and say that's not scary. It was sometimes a little fear, you know, gets you going in the morning. But it, you know, the more you learn each year, you grow as a person, as a business person, you find out where the intersection of your passion and profit really is. And if you're brave enough to go with that, which I've done a couple times where I was like, I don't care if I make less money, as long as I can support myself and my family, I'd rather be doing this. So when I left the real estate businesses, right, I was making a very good living, but now I'm making a much better living. You know, I mean, I'm the CEO of a company that'll do at least 12 million in sales this year. And that happened because I went in the direction that I felt I should go, even if it meant making less money. And ironically, of course, it's led to a lot more.
Yeah, absolutely. So I guess one skill that I would add to the unemployable skill set. I used to say that, you know, I believe creativity is the most important skill because even before sales, like, you've got to create something before you can go out and sell it.
Yeah. Dan Pink's book, A Whole New Mind, covers this really well about the people that are going to be the most coveted. And again, they are people who generally tend to rather not have a job, which is, you know, it's an interesting dilemma.
Yeah, definitely. Lately, the skill that I'm trending as my new top skill is the skill of learning new skills, like the ability to, you know, keep figuring out what you need to do. But let's talk about, you know, growing this company into what it has become today. Just on the back of this, you know, 10-year-old blog, to say now this became Genesis and Studio Press and Rainmaker and all this stuff. And is this all coming from, you know, asking the readers what they want? Like, I mean, this is a really powerful thing.
Yeah, we never ask, but we do watch, we do listen. I consider social media to be the greatest free market research environment the world has ever known. It's just so, it's like drinking from a fire hose. That's the problem. So it takes a certain amount of skill. I did a recent episode of Unemployable that talked to Tara Gentile about observation. It's this ability to see the problems and desires that people have, because, you know, Steve Jobs famously said that people don't know what they want until you show it to them. but they do know what they're missing in their lives.
Okay.
And that could be a desire for something else, or that could be a problem that's not being adequately solved. And that's our jobs as entrepreneurs to figure out the base thing that's not there and then provide it, right? So that's the tricky part.
That is the tricky part.
You've got to be able to spot it and then build it, but it works much better than the old, hey, what a great idea. Let's build it and then try to find some way to sell it and then find out no one wants it.
Well, you've been very successful at finding those white spaces, and it is a challenge. Like, it's, you know, Steve Jobs and Henry Ford. Like, if I asked the people what they want, they would have told me a faster horse.
Yeah, because they didn't have a concept, right? But they had a problem of transportation. That's obvious.
Yeah, they don't even know what they're missing. So has there been any inside of, you know, social media observation? Like, I really wish I had a theme that did blah, blah, blah. I really wish I had a podcast platform that did blah. Like, is that what people are literally tweeting about that you're picking up on?
No, it's more like I can't do X, Y, and Z, and I don't know CSS, and I can't find a developer. That's a problem,
okay,
right? It doesn't say I need a theme that does this. That said, I am a barely technical, you know, I've been online for a long time. So I used to code HTML the hard way, mm-hmm, and FTP things and all that crap. But I'm still not a coder. I'm not a highly technical person. I'm a content creator. I'm a writer at heart. So it helps to be a member of the tribe you're trying to provide for. And I am. I am very much like our perfect customer in that I want tech out of the way. I want to be able to do my podcast or write my articles or do my video show or whatever the case may be, because that's ultimately what matters, right? This podcast is great because of you and your guest, not, like I mentioned, the RSS feed that propagates it to iTunes, you know, and all that stuff. And as more and more people come into this realm of content and social media, they're having a hard enough time figuring out how to create the content, much less getting bogged down with technical things related to WordPress. You know, for us, WordPress compared to the way I used to have to do it was a godsend, and yet it was still not that easy. So that was how we got into that market. Building a design framework, for example, that takes a lot of the hassle out of digging into the source code and making changes, right? That's a very simple thing, but that is a huge benefit to someone like me, and by extension, our customers.
Yeah, absolutely. Being a part of that tribe yourself will build a huge amount of trust, and it kind of allows you to solve your own problems because other people are likely dealing with those as well. Like we saw, like we heard from John Naster. He's like, hey, this is how I built Velocity Page after like literally pulling my hair out one night trying to make some stupid thing in WordPress, yes, move over here. I'm like, there's got to be a better way. Oh, it turns out there is a better way.
And that's empathy right there. So there are some people through research and extrapolation can go into a field they know nothing about and then figure it out, right? But that's very difficult to do. So I'm a big proponent of figuring out who you are and what you care about to begin with, and then go from there. How can my problems effectively, are they the same as other people? The flip side of this is, in many ways, I'm not like a lot of our audience because I'm a big weirdo. You know, I mean, we're all our own unique human beings. So you have to be careful that not everything is going to line up perfectly between the way I view the world and everyone else does. But when it comes down to this core set of problems and desires, they are the same thing. You're walking in their shoes, seeing the world from their perspective.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. Well, Brian, thanks so much for dropping by to share your wisdom with the Side Hustle Show audience. Everyone check him out at copyblogger.com, of course, and rainmaker.fm for the Unemployable podcast. I think you'll enjoy that one. And Brian, we'll wrap it up with your number one tip for Side Hustle Nation.
I love the whole side hustle thing. I think it's smart. The first time when I quit my job as an attorney, I just jumped, which probably wasn't the smartest thing, but I had let myself get really miserable, you know. So in hindsight, that's probably what I needed to do, and that pressure got me going and all that. But I would not advise it for anyone else, really. But, you know, a side hustle, in psychological terms, the things that make us grow personally are called personal projects. You can call them all sorts of other different things. But a side hustle gig is a personal project. And if you're doing it purely to make extra cash, that's one thing and that's fine. But you're probably going to at some point burn out on it if it's not also something that you enjoy doing just for the process. So looking for profit, absolutely. But if you can enjoy doing the thing that you've chosen to do, it could be writing a book, it could be creating a course, it could be starting a podcast, because you have to show up consistently and you have to be into it, whether you're making a dime or you're making, you know, hundreds or you're making thousands. So just align your passion with your profit motive and you're going to be a lot happier. The psychological research on personal projects is all about what makes us happy. So I think you'll find that that makes you happier than just the money, because I don't know any entrepreneurs who do it just for the money.
Yeah, I was surprised to see a post from you on CopyPlug just like last week. It was like, you know, how to use the rule of three in your copywriting. And I was like, man, this guy's still at it after almost 10 years. He's still doing it. So yeah, find something you enjoy and then good things can come from that. I like that, Brian. Thanks so much. We'll catch up with you soon.
Thanks a lot.
As always, some interesting insights from Brian in this conversation, including the counterintuitive advice to never ask your audience what they need, but instead to just listen to what they say, what they tell you. And it kind of goes against the Ask Formula book that's making the rounds this fall. Now, of course, another important distinction to make is that content marketing only works if the content is worth reading and sharing. And in the standards for that, only keep getting higher. So it's definitely a challenge, becoming more challenging. But if you're up to the task, I think you might just have what it takes to be unemployable. So check sidehustlenation.com/136 for all the notes and links and grab a free PDF download with all Brian's top tips from this call. Or if you're listening from the United States, you can text copyblogger to 33444 to get a copy of that highlight reel document as well. Thank you so much for listening. Stay tuned next week to learn how to generate massive free media exposure for your business to land new customers and score some instant credibility. Until then, let's go out there, make something happen, and I'll see you in the next edition of The Side Hustle Show. Hustle on.
Thanks for listening to The Side Hustle Show at www.sidehustlenation.com.